to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The pandemic piled some extra challenges on singles looking for love. Dating wasn't completely impossible, but orders to stay away from most other people required some creativity in order to connect. Coffeehouse meetups were swapped for outdoor walks or even just phone calls. Today we'll hear stories of natives dating in the pandemic, and we'll discuss ways to navigate healthy dating going forward. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. In Oregon, a federal grant will help the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde restore the Willamette Falls. Oregon Public Broadcasting reported the Environmental Protection Agency awarded $800,000 to the tribes this week to help them identify and test for hazardous substances at the site, which formerly houses a paper mill. The waterfall is the second largest by volume in the country. The Grand Ronde bought the site in 2019. The land was ceded to the U.S. government under a treaty in 1855, and tribal members were forcibly removed from the Willamette Falls. The Grand Ronde have been working on a plan to restore the land and provide public access. They also are working on a plan for mixed-use development in the area that may include housing, commercial spaces, and educational sites about the tribe's history in the area. The president of the Haskell Indian Nations University in Kansas was removed late last week by the Bureau of Indian Education. Native News Online reports the move came after an investigation revealed Dr. Ronald Graham was stifling the free speech rights of students and faculty. The Faculty Senate of Haskell delivered a vote of no confidence last month in Graham, according to the student newspaper, The Indian Leader. Graham had blocked the paper's editor from routine news reporting, and the administration reduced its budget after refusing to recognize the paper as a student organization. In the no confidence vote, Graham was criticized for failing to call a required Board of Regents meeting during his first year in office. Faculty Senate members said that threatened Haskell's Higher Learning Commission accreditation. Graham began as president on May 15, 2020. Dr. Tamara Pfeiffer, who is Diné, will assume the role of acting president. She is the chief academic officer with the Bureau of Indian Education and has a long career as a teacher and administrator. In New Zealand, an indigenous lawmaker was ejected from parliament this week after he performed a Maori haka to protest what he said were racist arguments being made about a new health care system for indigenous people. The Independent reported Rauiri Waititi is co-leader of the Maori Party. The creation of the new Maori Health Authority is one of several changes planned for the country's health care system. Some conservative members of parliament argued it was segregation. In video posted to Metro UK, Waititi called the rhetoric racist and said the views and rights of indigenous people cannot be determined by those who are not indigenous.
If we find this attitude acceptable in this house, the constant barrage of insults to tangata whenua, then I find this house in disrepute. And
order. Order. The member's mic's off, so he will resume his seat. Order. The member will now leave the chamber.
A young Oglala Lakota and Han Gwich'in woman who calls herself a climate warrior and land protector is on the cover of Vogue Mexico this month, sporting high fashion and her own indigenous jewelry. Native News Online reports Quanah Chasing Horse is featured in a 20-page spread in the magazine. In 2019, Chasing Horse and her sister called on leaders at the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference to declare a state of emergency on climate change and reinstate a task force to push for stronger climate policies. Chasing Horse says her goal is to be more than a model, but also a role model. She told Native News Online, quote, to see good representation through beauty and fashion will change people's minds and thoughts. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Sherwood-Dooley. First dates are stressful. Often you worry about making a fool of yourself, or you're anxious about getting stuck in an awful date, looking for the exit. But the pandemic brought a whole new host of worries, not least of which is the possibility of contracting a serious, sometimes fatal, illness. Some singles chose to put a pause on dating and just stayed home, but others tried a few creative approaches to getting to know new people while keeping a safe distance. Are you someone, or someone you know, ready for regular dating again? And what concerns do you have about getting back out there? You can join our conversation today. Share your dating hopes and fears. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we're going to start off in Gallup, New Mexico. On the line today is Polly Denicklaw, and she is a micro-influencer known as The Other Native. And she is Dene. Thank you for being with us today. Welcome once again to Native America Calling, Polly.
Yeah, it's a everyone. My name is Polly Denicklaw, Hiltl Nishlando, Kiani Bashishin, and I'm just really happy to be here with y'all today.
Well, we are too. And so, Polly, thinking about dating in a pandemic, that's historic, but we want to hear your story. Tell us about how dating in the pandemic has gone.
Yeah, so on my social media, and I feel like what most people know me for are like my dating stories and talking about dating. And I think that during the pandemic, it did create this like really interesting dynamic where, you know, you don't want to go out and meet people because it's like really scary and there's this like virus. And so it really became this moment of like, okay, how do we do this in a way that's safe? And how do you like meet people when you can't actually meet people? And I think that for me, it really, like, I in general just like enjoy really long talking stages when it comes to dating. And so I was like, okay, perfect. I can just like get to know people better, you know, like vet them and make sure that I actually like them as a person. And so I think the pandemic offered me that space to like really get to know people better. And then just like FaceTime, or, you know, talking through like social media, you know, texting throughout the day. I think it was, for me, I really enjoyed that aspect of the pandemic because I think before the pandemic, it was automatically like, oh, let's meet. And I sometimes didn't feel comfortable doing that. Like I really wanted to get to know people before I like met them in person. And so the pandemic really offered like that space for me to get to know people before I actually like made the time to meet them in person. And so I really enjoyed that aspect.
And so having to get to know somebody online, what is that like? How is that different than, you know, meeting somebody, reading their cues, or just being in the same room, feeling their vibe? What changes and how do you get around that?
So I think for me, I just really enjoy like dating and talking to people. I think it's really fun. And the thing about meeting people like online and stuff is that you meet people outside of the people that you know, right? So you only know a certain amount of people, and those people only know a certain amount of people. And so if you don't run in sort of like the same social circles, you won't meet these other people. And I think that like dating online offers the option of like meeting people who you never would have. And I've met some super, super awesome like people through dating apps, and it's like been a enjoyable experience for me. But that's also because like I have no expectations when it comes to like using dating apps and like dating in general. I just am interested in like getting to know people. And I think that through online and through like social media and stuff, you get to see like different aspects of people's lives, and you know, you see things that they post throughout the day, or you see things that are of interest to them that they post on their stories. And so it's just like these little details and these little glimpses into the multitude of what a person is and who they are and what they like and what they enjoy. And so for me, I think like doing stuff online, like you get to see these like glimpses, and I feel like I look at those as like, oh, this is what these people enjoy. This is what they like. These are the memes that they like. This is the comedy that they find funny. And so I guess that's kind of how like I really get to know people, is actually like noticing what they're posting and how that is like a reflection of how, what they find funny, what they like, their political views, etc.
And so what about shaking the truth out? You know, there's a very easy way people can present a certain kind of self online, but you know, you don't see things until you start spending time. And what do you do to see the truth?
I think that the misconception is that people don't do that in real life. So people do hide parts of themselves in real life, even if you meet them in your daily life. Like they automatically hide certain parts of themselves, things that they don't want to share with you. And I think that people assume that it's more curated online, but with every person, there's a curation that happens. You know, you are a different person than you are with your family, than you are with your friends, than you are at work. And just because you share a certain side of yourself in those different environments versus like how you are with, you know, your new friends versus like friends that you've known since you were in elementary school, it doesn't mean that you're like hiding things or you're being untruthful. It just means that different people in different environments bring out a different side of you. And so that's the same for like meeting somebody online. You see parts of them and sides of them. But the thing about social media is that it's a culmination of a lot of people in their lives. It's their families, it's their friends, it's their coworkers, all sort of integrating in this one space online where they engage with this person. And how does that engagement look like? Like what are the comments that people are posting underneath their photos? It's just very interesting to me. And so I think that we all show only certain sides of ourselves. And I think for me, when I meet people online, like obviously there are certain things that I do to make sure that I'm like not getting catfish or whatever. And I FaceTime with people a lot to ensure that. And if they tell me certain things, like I go ahead and Google that. and I look like, and also I just want to say that there are stages. There's people who I like talking to and like engaging with, but I don't necessarily see myself being in a relationship with them or going any further with them. And then there's a tier up where I'm like, okay, I'm kind of interested in this person, more interested. So I'll take a little bit longer to like, I guess, vet them and see if what they're telling me is true. And then there's people who I actually really like and I'm very interested in dating. And that's when I look more into what they're telling me and making sure that, you know, just fact checking the details. And so those are the extra things that I do. But I think that people can easily lie to you in real life.
Yep. And so much is revealed when you date somebody, and just we are getting a view into dating in the pandemic, thinking about different things. Maybe you took a dive and decided to, okay, I'm going to try a different way. If we can't meet up personally, we're going to do something different. Share your experience with us. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And now that many things are lifting, are you considering getting back out there? You can share your thoughts with us today. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you need to call in anonymously, you can. You can ask your questions too. Our phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848. And Paul, you've got about a minute before break. Anything else you discovered about dating in the pandemic?
No, it's been a really cool, interesting experience trying to date during the pandemic. Also considering that I'm moving soon. So it was like a bunch of things all at once, but it was interesting. And I think that it provided alternatives to like how we can date and how we think about dating. And I think that was really cool.
All right. Thank you for that. Polly Denicklaw here with us today. She is a micro influencer. Maybe you have found her on social media. She goes by the other Native. If you have any thoughts for her, go ahead, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And we're wondering, you know, when you think about dating during these times, what are some of the most challenging things? How do you get around them? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you dated during the pandemic and you have a story to share, give us a ring. Got to keep them PG. But, you know, what have been some of the things you've run into? Or maybe you really found somebody you want to share the rest of your life with. And you got stories like that, we're curious. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you have been out of the dating scene for a long time because you're married or been with somebody for some time, and you're just curious, how are people doing it today? You can share some thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what are some good lessons you learned about love during the pandemic? Maybe things went south. You got a story to share about that too, how challenging relationships got. You can share thoughts on that. Phone lines are open. 1-800-99-NATIVE is a number. Another large federal relief package is in the works. Tribes are hopeful for funds to create and improve infrastructure for clean water. Studies show Native Americans are more likely to lack access to running water and indoor plumbing. We'll hear about it on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Thanks for tuning in today here on Native America Calling. We have opened up our phone lines to hear about dating in the pandemic. If you have some thoughts for us, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your thoughts and questions. And we heard about the other Native, a.k.a. Polly Denicklaw, and her experience. We now go to Sisseton, South Dakota, to check in with Allison Renville. And she is an activist and political consultant. And she is Hunkpapa, Lakota, and Sisseton, Dakota, from the Lake Traverse Reservation. Our pleasure to have her here today. Welcome to Native America Calling, Allison.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
And so, Allison, you heard Polly's story. What's yours? Go ahead and share.
So I am a political activist. I have a background associated with the Bernie Sanders campaign. I was a delegate in 2016 that eventually led me to take part in Standing Rock. And so ever since then, we've just been picking up every single kind of political issue, and we developed a statewide, fully ran by Native American women political action committee. So right now we're really looking into kind of what our social dynamic is to begin with here in South Dakota, but also, you know, as a single person, you know, I've really had to come to terms with how important politics is with dating. So, you know, in this social climate now, you know, it comes down to like masking, and, you know, is this potential suitor susceptible to the Trump and QAnon disinformation campaigns? What are their past traumas and dysfunctions? Is there alcohol use? Is there drug use? You know, things like this always play into it, because, you know, there's not always a expectation of monogamy. And some people actually see monogamy as a hindrance when there can be such a heavy, kind of low-key important role in activism when it comes to a sexual liaison. You know, there's so many different moves that have been made, you know, in the form of pillow talk. And it's just, it's something to consider, because I don't think people talk about that enough. And so what I've experienced is that, you know, it ends up being, we're like PTS dating, right? So a good majority of Americans are walking around traumatized, triggered on a daily basis, just flaring, you know, flailing blood everywhere, you know, stripping their traumas all over their communities and within their social circles. So, you know, when you get to a point where you can, you know, spend this much time alone and single, you really begin to see your value, and you see what it is that you deserve. And so it's hard to distinguish, you know, your own role in society while, you know, everything is shut down or everyone is home, and still keep that value and sustain that, because it's, you know, you need to be enforced. You need to be reinforced every single time you talk to someone that, you know, you're important, you deserve this, you deserve that. And so when it comes down to having to get to know somebody so in-depthly through social media, or, you know, through over the phone and FaceTime and stuff, it just doesn't, it eventually starts to feel like you have that personal connection, but you have to at least, you know, you got to plan out a month ahead of time to even have that, you know, that personal actual face-to-face interaction with someone, and hope that it translates from the internet.
And that's interesting. Allison, you made me think of something too about a lot of the introspection that has definitely, you know, a lot of people have jumped into that and thinking about their life, where they are, where they want to go, and, you know, just really thinking about all of these things. Would you say that even now that things are starting to open up, people are willing to meet face to face, is this the best time to date, with everybody doing their own self-checks? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and I mean, like, you really do have to give it, you know, 10 to 14 days, or even up to 21 days, to just make sure that, you know, they don't have any exposure. Because although, you know, I kind of just really jumped back into it again in about March. I like Tinder, right? So Tinder was originally supposed to be the equivalent to Grindr for straight people. So it's about, you know, being able to have that freedom to meet up with someone, have your intentions out on the table, and then, you know, just enjoying each other's company. But with the pandemic now, apparently Tinder has become a fully functional dating site. So that that in itself too has been something that kind of, you know, threw me for a circle, because I didn't understand that people were intending to build a relationship off of, you know, off of Tinder. So that's been something different too. Recently I met a local tribal member from a safer area. You know, like I said, I'm from South Dakota, so we have a lot of politics around the COVID-19 pandemic and masking and, you know, things like that. So I had thought it was a safe alternative to, you know, perhaps trying to reach out to someone more organically. But, you know, then it just came right back around where, you know, we're in a small town, and I had asked up front, are you seeing other people? You should probably tell me for my own health and safety. And I ended up still having to find out from a third party, because, you know, it is still a small town area. And so it was just, it was really frustrating, because those are the things, you know, in a situation like this, when you're so being able to communicate, you know, communication has been some, like a tool that we should have all came out of this with, but, you know, in trying to communicate, it ended up just repeating that same kind of cycle, you know, as pre-pandemic. So it's just, it's still the same, you know, but PTSD has kind of made it into this whole thing of PTS dating, and it really is still a thing, and it's definitely more intense with the lack of trusted circumstances for both parties involved. But, you know, there's still something here that has reinforced our own values, and whether it be, you know, through bad experiences or, you know, domestic violence or sexual assault and stuff, you know, there's still that room for reactionary dating as well. You know, so it's like, you know, we're still kind of, you know, susceptible to flailing at the same time, but in that same sense, you know, it goes back to trying to keep your own self in check and making sure that you do know what you deserve and that you're constantly reminded by your potential partners that, you know, you are worth everything, rather than, you know, falling back into the same kind of stereotypical, you know, dating circumstances in reservation life.
And Allison, you mentioned a couple of different ways of people are connecting. You said Grindr and Tinder. For a listening audience out there who are saying, what are those? Break it down, how it works. I think they might find it interesting.
You know, a lot of people joke about swiping left and swiping right and stuff, you know, and Tinder itself is, you know, there's room for personal information so you can put out there what it is that who you are. So, you know, for me, I made sure to include in my profile, you know, like I'm a Democrat, I'm a Bernie supporter, I wear a mask. You know, I made sure to make all of these points across because it's once you get like a premium premium membership. Here, I'm giving you all my secrets. Once you get a premium membership, you get to see who's already swiped right on you. So, like, it's almost scary because the people that are actually just looking at your picture and swiping as quick as possible, it's semi-dangerous because, you know, we have people not just in the gay community, but in as a Native American woman, there's still that threat of sexual violence and or, you know, even being fetishized to the point where, you know, you're being mistreated and misled into the wrong direction. And so it's, but Bumble, there's Bumble, and you can, as a woman, you get to choose who can contact you and who can't. Facebook dating, I have a friend in Montreal who is dealing with the fact that their vaccines are so short in Canada that they're stretching out the time between the doses. So there's actually an 8-month waiting period to get your second dose. So they're really kind of trying to keep up their morale at the same time, but, you know, being a little discouraged kind of really puts a peg in your wheel when you feel like you're ready to go out and interact. And fortunately, you know, American tribes in South Dakota have had like an excessive amount of access to the vaccine. But at the same time, you know, we're under a major disinformation campaign. So it's really hard, and you have to be upfront with people. And I'm really glad that Polly mentioned Facebook, because like I said, the Trump and QAnon disinformation campaigns in South Dakota and in the Midwest are so thick. They're so thick that it's hard to infiltrate that vulnerability because, you know, there's so many people who are feeling disconnected right now. And or even say there's like white passing natives who are, you know, searching for that cultural connection and perhaps even going into these new relationships optimistically, hoping to not just belong, but eventually make relatives with those new relationships. So it's just, you know, there's so many different little things because both of these situations are, you know, they're online dating. And so they don't, you know, they feel like they don't want to backtrack into old behaviors because, you know, they've spent this last year in reflection and it's like turning into better people. We all want to come out as better people. So it's like, you know, how do you still sustain that consistency with your growth, but at the same time being, you know, overeager to want to jump into old ways, just being fully vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, elders, there you go. A breakdown of how things are going these days. What's your take on it? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And again, if you decided to date during the pandemic, what were some of the things you had to switch up? Maybe new avenues you cruise down. You can give us a ring. Again, if you need to call in anonymously, you can. 1-800-996-2848. And Allison, you're also a single parent. And what are some of the things or approaches you took? Or what happens when you add that to the equation?
Oh, my goodness. You know, and I'm not sure if this is actually relative to the pandemic itself, but it to me, it felt like it would have been because I could not. A match through a relative recently had me bringing my kid on our first date. And so although we live in the same community, we're like, you know, within 15, 20 miles of each other, it still took us that month to get to the point where we could meet face to face. But because there's like a lack of trusted support systems where, you know, in any other circumstance, you'd have a, you know, a plethora of babysitters through relatives and nieces and nephews and stuff. So we, and it was odd to me because the first time it was suggested, it was like, oh, go ahead, bring your kids over. We'll have a barbecue. My kids will be here. We'll, you know, whatever. And to me, that was weird, you know, because it's like, would you really be bringing your kids on a first date if it was in a restaurant or, you know, in any other situation? But it's definitely something that has come up because, you know, you right now our children can't be vaccinated just yet. You know, South Dakota and IHS, well, the states have authorized 12 to 15-year-olds, but IHS right now has a current hold on it. And so, you know, my older son can't be vaccinated yet, and then I have a young child, and he can't be vaccinated. So, I mean, there's still that precaution that you need to take. But so how do you get around that, you know, and how do you come out of it satisfied, you know, when there's no lack of, you know, there's no lack of, how you want to say it, there's a lack of personal connection because you're still so distracted by what's going on with your kids and trying to keep everybody safe. So it's definitely made it harder having kids because then, you know, you don't have anyone come to your house and you can't go to other people's houses. And so just beyond having that personal connection through FaceTime and stuff, it's really hard to transition that into real life.
And something really specific too that I'm also wondering when you talk about these different apps and thinking about, okay, you're using them to meet people within your nation. What's it like to swipe on the res?
Oh, it's been, it was really refreshing, actually. More recently, like I had mentioned earlier in my introduction, that I had met someone who was had currently moved to our area. And so I was really excited to find out, hey, you know, you're a tribal member. You grew up in the area. We have, you know, mutual friends. And like this, the experience was a little bit more familiar rather than trying to explain to a non-native person what a tribal lifestyle is like, or, you know, even just like the way that you think and stuff is hard to explain to a non-native person, much less someone who could potentially be a Trump supporter behind closed doors, you know? So it was really refreshing. But then at the same time, you know, like I said, the small town, gossip or whatever you want to call it comes into play, because although I was mature enough to ask face to face, then you have to kind of try to justify how you're feeling, you know, and because it's not necessarily rejection, but at the same time, it's like, I would have liked a little honesty. And so, you know, dating people online is really, really fishy because, you know, sometimes you could be anyone you want on Facebook. You can use filters. You can use, you know, there's even apps to correct your sentences to make it sound like you're a little bit more literate than you might be. So, I mean, there's all of these things that come into play with your social media and your online persona. But at the same time, you have to get that to be realistically who you're going to portray when you do meet in person. So it's really important to me specifically to put my whole and true self out there. So I'm like exactly who I am and who I say I am prior to meeting. But then, you know, then you get to the point, and someone like I have a lot of political followers. And I got, you know, a little sway here and there. I got some strings to pull. And so it's like when you do meet me in person, a novice person to my experience here, to my role in our society, is a little intimidating. And so, you know, how do we properly find people healthfully that will not be intimidated by us, and, you know, without expanding into too many different networks where now you have to plan on catching a flight or taking a 4-hour drive, or, you know, in my case, if I was to have to go to Rapid City, that's a 7-hour drive, you know, and it's just something else. But it's definitely a lot different than it used to be. You know, prior to the pandemic, you could jump on Tinder and meet somebody down the street and then go for drinks and, you know, perhaps never see them again. But now it's like, you might give me COVID, so let's not go down that road.
Yep, it's a whole new world. And swiping on the res, go ahead, your comments, dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. All my drum singers out there, I want a song, Swiping on the Res. Polly Denniclaw is here with us too. And Polly, just turning it to you. Anything you want to add? She is also known as the Other Native. She's a micro-influencer. Go ahead, Polly.
I just really want to talk about swiping on the res because it's like such an experience. Oh my gosh. You know, because I'm here on Navajo, and so I have like my location to like 100 miles. And I also have, I think it's like Tinder Gold or something. I pay to see like who likes me or who swipes right on me. And so it's just so interesting swiping on the res because there's so many people like, who do move back home and you don't know like that they move back home, but they like work for the tribe. And you know, they're like educated and they're attractive and they come from the same community as you. And for me, when it comes to like dating and stuff, I always have this like thought at the back of my mind where it's like, I don't want to spend a lifetime translating. And so that's why, like in my own dating life, I prioritize like dating Native people or people who are from my tribe. And that's like what I do. And also like with the app that I use Tinder because I've found, that when it comes to trying to like date in like Native communities, that's like the best one. Cause most people like it has just the highest amount of users. Because compared to like more urban areas, dating apps have slowly sort of like expanded into Native communities. Whereas before when I was like, I think it was like 22 when I first started getting on dating apps, like there was nobody who was on dating apps. And so now there are more Indigenous people on dating apps. And so
it sounds like it's blowing up. And with that much understanding, I know there's somebody out there whose ears perked up when we started saying that, swiping on the res. And this is a really, you know, a look into who we are as contemporary Indigenous people too. And how does that compare to what your grandma or grandpa said, how they used to court? You can share, you can compare. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in now.
Support by Western Governors University, an online university for working adults and underserved populations. At WGU, students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner with little or no debt. With bachelor's and master's degree programs in 4 fields, business, IT, teaching, and health professions, including nursing. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees.
You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesota Pueblo. And love in the time of the coronavirus. How different is it? That's our conversation today. Maybe you tried dating during the pandemic. Maybe the virus put a strain on your established relationship. Anywhere you fall in between those two lines and beyond, give us a ring. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. Let's go ahead and hear from our listening audience. We have Colleen Webbs, who is joining us today out of Webster, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Thanks for giving us a ring, Colleen. Give us your thoughts.
Well, thanks for having my call. I've been listening to everyone talk. And so I'm calling in as a mother of a son who's 26.
All right. He
just happens to be, I don't know, of course I'm biased because I think he's about the most eligible bachelor out there, but he is just really not into social media and social online, you know, Facebook or any of these things. Now, I know that he has mentioned that he's gone on some of these dating sites and stuff, but I guess I didn't realize until listening to your show how technical dating has become. And I'm wondering, you know, what percentage of the population are just not even being considered anymore because they, you know, choose not to share their entire life online to be investigated, you know, prior to meeting or anything like that. I guess from a mother's perspective, I'm thinking maybe that's why he doesn't seem to be meeting anybody, because otherwise I just think he's a catch, but he just doesn't prefer to be online. So what do you do in that case? Has it really turned to that society is, you know, basically if you don't have, you know, a bunch of comments and things that you've made and shared your political beliefs and everything online for the world to know, that you are not really an eligible bachelor unless you happen to find somebody that you work with or, you know, a friend of a friend kind of thing.
That is such a great take. And Colleen, I'm glad you called in. I'm going to turn it over to our micro-influencer on that one. Polly, anything, Polly Deniclaw here with us. Anything you would like to tell our caller, Colleen?
Yeah, I definitely think that, at least for like me personally and for the women who I'm in community with, the reason why it's so important to like have this like background information is because you are meeting strangers. and so that's why like sort of making sure people are safe or making sure people are who they say they are, I think is really important if you're trying to like date online. And putting in that extra effort, because I will say this, if I don't find somebody online and I can't find their social media, like automatically, I think that they're a catfish and they're not real. And I know that there are some people who choose not to be on social media, but it's very interesting for me because I see people who don't have a lot of like social media, but then are on dating apps. And so it's just like, a little bit of background information would be like super helpful, just to make sure that like people are who they say they are, before I invest like time into them and into getting to know them. And I know that it does make things complicated for people who choose not to be like on social media or who don't enjoy it. But that's like my perspective on sort of like why I do that. Cause I did talk to somebody who didn't have a huge like social media platform at all, and like I could not find him, but then we like talked on the phone and we FaceTimed, and that's how I got to know him. But I took a chance. I'll say that I took a chance on him, because I was nervous because I didn't know if he was real.
Very interesting. Well, I appreciate all this insight and perspectives coming in. Maybe you got one to share with us. You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Right now, we're going to go to Mission, South Dakota. Joining us on the line is Corrine Rice Graycloud. She is the CEO of Rice Consulting, which focuses on Indigenous education and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And she is Mohawk and Lakota. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Corrine, welcome.
And Yawa, thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. And also here, too, is Greg Graycloud, who also joins us out of Mission. He is the co-founder of Weecha Ugly, Native Men Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And Greg is Crow Creek Sioux. Our pleasure to have him here. Greg, welcome. Thank you for that. And you know what, Corrine and Greg, so much has been said. I just want to get your comments, and especially when we think about healthy relationships. I know both of you work in this arena. You're both engaged too. And so you got another perspective to share about all of this. And Greg, go ahead and start us off.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. We started dating early on, we started talking before the pandemic, COVID was a thing kind of overseas. And we started talking more into that. And we met before the pandemic was here and kind of closer to the States areas, more specific to South Dakota. And so we were part of the ones who, or I was part of the ones who probably broke a rule early on by leaving a community to go and see the woman who I'm now engaged with. I took a chance to.
Oh, nice. And Corrine, anything you want to share?
Yeah, I would just also add to what Pauline was saying is that there are so many different ways to access the person you're dating now. Like we were in the beginning of our relationship, like Greg said, it was prior to COVID really becoming what it was. We were living in separate states. I was living in Minneapolis at the time, and he was here in Mission. And so we were already existing in a long-distance relationship, not because of COVID, but because of distance itself, and would FaceTime each other and call and text and that kind of thing. So when COVID really kicked in, the method for contacting one another didn't really change. We still would FaceTime each other. But like Greg said, it was traveling to meet each other became more risky, and we had to weigh in a lot of those safety concerns when spending time with each other.
And so now my auntie hat comes in. You too. it's interesting. And seeing that this need to connect surpass some of these different things. And I think that also speaks about, you know, the times that we're in and also wanting to make those connections and thinking about all of this and all of the work that's been done to make sure that our communities are safe and making sure that we are heeding to different protocols and things like that. And just thinking of what it resulted in. I know there's other people out there who are relating to some of this, and I thank both of you for being honest about that. And Corinne, just thinking back about, you know, just going forward and saying, okay, this is worth it. I want to hear more about that. Tell me more.
Yeah. So there definitely came a time where when COVID got pretty serious and we had to consider the borders being controlled and maintained for the safety of those communities. We did come to a decision where we had to say, you know, what are we going to do? And decided at that point to live together. And that decision was at a point where it was appropriate in our relationship anyway. But it was a decision that we felt confident in making because we knew, okay, let's become one household. We're going to start thinking about safety at this point. But I felt comfortable with making that decision with Greg because of healthy communication, which is something that we established very early on in our relationship, right? Everything was communicated on, whether it was uncomfortable or not, we talked about it. And it made sense for us to live in one household. And so we made that move it worked out.
And Greg, of course, if there's anything you want to add, go for it.
It was. So the communication was a big deal early on, having the healthy communication and the not having necessarily expectations for one another. I didn't have any hidden expectations for her that she had to meet for me, and she did not have any hidden expectations that I had to meet hidden from her. It worked out that way, and especially in the beginning of COVID and having moved in together, it was kind of actually very helpful establishing that level of communication right away and non-expectations of that distance apart. It was very helpful for us in our relationship being in the new in COVID time.
And Greg, I'm wondering too, your take on just thinking about, you know, the introspection that a lot of people have done, where maybe right now connecting with people, you're going to find them the realest is that they're going to be or the most centered. Any thoughts on that?
Based on that, for our aspect or understanding, that is, during this time of the pandemic, it left a lot of time for everybody to focus on themselves because there wasn't a lot of time to mix and mingle or communicate and be together as Native people. We like to gather. It's our culture to gather in these spaces. And being that we weren't able to do that, left a lot of time for a lot of people who maybe not have started a healing journey to maybe focus on themselves and start a healing journey on their own, on how they understand it themselves. Those that didn't quite get that chance to, it is difficult going into new relationships and being and not expecting or expecting things out of our partners that we're not communicating. But I think it relies on the person, man or woman, to begin a healing journey and not push things onto our partners.
That's really important. You know what? I got a caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Jennifer, who is in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Jennifer, thank you for reaching out. What would you like to add? Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to reassure the woman who called in about her son. I think, I'm not sure if it was her and somebody else, but just talking about people who are not necessarily engaged online. I'm actually backing away from Facebook right now and just, you know, to not be drawn into that. And there are a lot of people like me out there. And I met my husband, just kind of a random occurrence before the pandemic. But we began a 9-month long distance relationship, and because I had an internship actually in Santa Fe, and he was in Anchorage. And I just wanted to say that having distance really does allow you to get to know somebody a little bit more deeply. And I think that can be a bonus. And for her not to, you know, necessarily worry that much, because if he just puts it out there that, you know, he wants to meet somebody and just works on himself, that, you know, who knows what will happen. So anyway, that's what I wanted to add.
Jennifer, thank you for sharing that there in Anchorage, Alaska. And thinking about moving forward, either getting out there dating again or really taking a relationship that started during the pandemic to the next level. Any advice, Corrine?
I would just like to add also that having a healthy relationship with yourself is the foundation for any healthy relationship in your life outwardly, right? So if you're working on yourself, and you spent the pandemic and you didn't date and you just focused on your healing, like Greg was saying, that is the foundation for stepping out and finding potentially a partner that could complement in the areas of your life where you're seeking a partner to enjoy life with. So I would just say, like, if you chose not to date during that time and you're self-reflecting and you're self-healing, what you're creating is that healthy foundation for a healthy relationship.
Thank you. And Greg, any final comments? Got about a minute.
It would just be that. It's really depending on who the person is during this time and how you choose to communicate with your partner, pandemic related or not. I think communication and complete honesty without fear of receiving judgment from your partner or somebody you're dating with, being honest and open, will give that person that choice. It's not necessarily your choice to make on whether they're going to accept you fully or not. You leave that kind of up to the person, and if they choose to accept things about you, then you can really start building a great foundation of trust.
And Greg, any signals of, you know, that somebody is in a healthy state and things to look for or putting yourself in check? Any extra thoughts?
It's great to be accountable to women in your life, whether they be aunts, sisters, cousins, mothers, grandmothers. It's to be accountable to them really tells a lot to your partner. So for me, for instance, I'm accountable to aunties around here who hold me accountable in a public setting even, and that's welcomed. My partner seeing that, Corrine first seeing that, left an impression on her to where maybe I was safer, or maybe she could feel safe around me, her children, she could feel safe with her children around me. But it was really keen on being accountable to women. That way you're basing that relationship with yourself as well. So she might have based her relationship on us by how I interacted with the women in my life.
Well, I have certainly learned a lot. Maybe you have too. And now you're ready to talk. You can always send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And if you're online, Twitter, 1-800-99-NATIVE is how you find us. You can find us on Instagram too. Thank you to everybody who shared their story today here on our program. Thank you to Corrine Rice Graycloud, as well as Greg Graycloud. And thank you to Allison Renville and Polly Dennett Claw. We are back again on Monday with a conversation about access to water for our communities. This is a big issue, and we know you have things you'd like to share about it. We hope you'll tune in and call in on Monday. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our resource development specialist. Antonio Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations. And the president and CEO of Kawanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, whose special selection of dried herbs are chosen for superior quality, and many sage, sweetgrass braids, and red willow bark and cedar are wild-crafted. All available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila. This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.